Machete Mate recognizes the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and any indigenous elders of other communities who may be listening today. We stand in solidarity in their struggle towards the colonization and land back.
Buenas, mi gente. Welcome to another episode of Machete y Mate. What is good? My name is Austin G, and I'm coming to you here once again from unceded Manahoac land here in so-called Virginia. Once again, filling in for our normal MC, Leroy, who's had some scheduling conflicts as well as dealing with life as being a dad, right? He's a very busy guy over there in Australia. Hopefully soon we'll be able to bring the whole team back together again for an episode and record more consistently. Oh my goodness, wouldn't we love to do that? But I should add, despite Leroy's absence, he continues to do a wonderful job with our Machete Minutes, our weekly news roundups. So if you miss his wonderful voice, which Leroy, if you're listening, I always thought that you had a wonderful voice. So there you go. You can subscribe to our Patreon and hear him talk more regularly. Nonetheless, we've got a very good episode lined up for you all today alongside a wonderful guest here that I'm going to be bringing to you all very shortly. But before we introduce our guest, I just wanted to pass it over to my co-host here, returning co-host. Oh yeah, what do we have, 3 or 4 times in a row, T? Oh my goodness, that's gotta be a new record. T, tell the people how you're doing today.
Goodness gracious, I know, right? It's like, it's so, you know, the scheduling conflicts is always difficult and whatnot. I'm doing well. It's kind of a busy couple weeks over here in the Blue Ridge Mountains, getting, you know, in the process of moving, and, you know, which is always just a fucking nightmare. But, you know, other than that, you know, I'm feeling good. It's springtime, you know, the flowers are blooming, and you know, the Blue Ridge Mountain area and the Shenandoah Valley is just, it's painfully beautiful this time of year, like painfully beautiful. Like when the sun really warms up, the mountains really do take on a blue character. Like you're driving, or if you're just in there, like you see, it looks blue. It's just, it's absolutely gorgeous out here, and it's my favorite time of year out here. So I'm feeling good, and I'm really looking forward to the show tonight. We have a great guest. We're very honored to have him along. So, yeah, I'm just looking forward to breaking it down.
Likewise, brother. Likewise. Oh, my goodness. So I'm very jealous of where you're at because you have the mountains nearby. I do not have the mountains nearby, right? But the weather here has been, like, hit or miss. I don't know if you've been getting some of the storms. You've been getting some of the storms too, right? Like,
Oh yeah.
Oh, I was about to say, because it was like damn near tornado yesterday, or was it 2 days ago? I'm like, oh my goodness, what is happening?
I love that shit, man. I love the fucking spring rains. I love just like when it comes, like all of a sudden it's just like, yep. And of course, my two little dogs that would be Buck. Buck wants to podcast. He likes to podcast a lot. Otto, not as much, but you know, the longtime listeners are very familiar with the two little dachshunds, so. Not because of me, of course, but they're much more famous than I am.
That they most certainly are. Oh, my goodness. I will echo you there. But yeah, so as far as me, right, I've been doing good, right? Got some wonderful trips that I'm planning that I'm so excited for. I'm going to be to all the homies and the haters. Dare I say the haters? I will be in New York City in a couple weeks for all the haters and the homies to come out. And not just that. Your boy may or may not be in Las Vegas in a couple months, too. Who knows? We'll see. We'll see how things go. But that brings me to what we have planned here tonight. Oh, my goodness. So we've got a really important interview discussion lined up for all of you listening as we are welcoming somebody here for the first time with us. Oh, my goodness. To help us digest some of the most recent news out of Ecuador, right? We've talked a lot about things that have been happening in Ecuador in the last couple months. There was a very, very big election that happened in Ecuador back in February, and the country's been dealing with a lot of the fallout and the effects from that. This would be, to help us here, my good friend Julian Garrido. Julian is somebody that I met, just for some context, Julian is somebody that I met a couple years ago as I was down in Peru doing election work. He's from Argentina, but he is based in Quito, Ecuador, where he does extensive political work. Introduce yourself to the people, Julian.
Hi, people. Hi, I'm very. It's very nice to be here. Well, I'm Julian Garrido. I work here in Ecuador. I'm based here like 5 years ago. Since 5 years ago, I work as a consultant in communication and political strategy, and I'm mainly focused on issues of public opinion and working on elections and for governments. So, well, we're in a place who is in a very complicated crisis since a couple of months ago. So we have a lot to talk about.
Yes, we do. Thank you, Julian. So that kind of gives me the perfect start here, which is a very simple question. What's happening in Ecuador right now?
Well, that's quite a question. Let's see. I think it's happening in Ecuador. We have a crisis that it's not only a security crisis, which is at the top of the iceberg, but an economic, a social, a political, and health, and even more crisis that has 5 to 6 years of development. And it's consequence of, I would say, many things, but I would like to highlight three, I think the most important. The peace agreement in Colombia, signed a couple of years ago, had an impact in the criminal economic structure in this area, and led all the cartels and drug dealers made Ecuador a very special place to sit on, because while this peace agreement was signed, we had in Ecuador like two governments who had defunded the security system like very, very heavily, you know. And we had a strong process of deinstitutionalization and deregulation and loss of real power of the Ecuadorian state, mainly in the area of the border with Colombia. So that made a place there that we had an absence of the state, and also a lot of structure for the criminal economics going down to Ecuador from Colombia. I think those two things, mixed with the inability of the last two governments to react and correct, made a explosive cocktail that led us here, you know. And this situation also was getting worse because of the solution proposed by the president and the last two presidents here. Two weeks ago, I think when Austin and I talked about this program, they just have proposed something similar to the gun ownership as a solution for the security crisis here. So it was really crazy and also not a solution at all, you know. I think to end this, to not make it very long and start discussing, I think it's the triumph of a new, anti-human rights paradigm within the political class, at least, the people who's working in politics. I don't know what do you guys think, but the scenario is not very optimistic in here. I don't think it's an issue, it's a crisis that can be solved only with a change of government. So we are much more complicated because of these geopolitical and criminal structures moving around Ecuador and this zone of the world. Yeah.
So this is, from the sound of it, it is a systemic problem. It is a problem of the system, not necessarily the individual politicians. Like, it doesn't matter the name or the face, it's the system itself. And that narcos have essentially kind of moved into regions where the state has been withdrawn, and they're kind of taking over the functions, you know, of the state in these regions.
Yes, I think I would say there is a the Telegraph, the British daily, made a reportage of, about this situation, and it says it talks about how the economic, the criminal economic structure has replaced the state in some places of here. You know, so they bring security, they bring health, they bring even education in and work. So that, I mean, I just said I think the Ecuadorian government. The third aspect was the Ecuadorian government was withdrawing, and that made the problem very much more complicated.
So that's really interesting, Julian. And I think that's part of the perspective that we don't hear in the United States, right? Like, mm-hmm. like me personally, I consider myself somebody that like pays attention to Latin American news, but I never made that connection, right? The peace deal in Colombia, getting the narcos to kind of migrate over to Ecuador. And you know what it kind of reminds me of? It reminds me a little bit of Central America, right? Like, and the reason I say that is because of what is happening in El Salvador, right? A lot of the Maras getting pushed out of El Salvador and going to places like Honduras, right? Because of the situation. Now, a little bit different, but kind of a similar analogy. But I'm curious to follow up. So you mentioned the rise in criminality that has occurred because of this, right? How would you say this ties into Guillermo Lasso specifically? Because I've seen the reports of his engaging with narco trafficking or this, what is it, the Albanian mafia? Or like, is that true? Like, how does Lasso himself tie into some of the criminal activities?
Well, I mean, in the most optimistic, if I would like to talk as a pro Lasso, I would say that he's a bad pilot in a bad storm. To be good with him, you know, but also you have some other things. I mean, it's clear. I think anybody can deny that the narco are all around the political parties and the structure of the elections. But the president had a scandal a couple of weeks ago that. Digital media led and revealed that the president's stepbrother, I think, had some connection with the Albanian mob, which are the guys like who are controlling now the cocaine route to from Ecuador to Europe and the US. The evidence said that they at least had contact in campaign. So that we think a great deal of people here in Ecuador thinks that make him unfit for the office, you know. So even the problem is bigger than him, he cannot be there because he cannot combat that. He's part of that structure. He had received money. He had or at least his more circle more proximity. The easiest thing to say is that he's related with the mob, but I think it's mostly more important to highlight a thing that I said before, but not really deep, and is that this is a consequence of neoliberalism. You know, of the founded everything here, and if you are not taking space and giving something that you have to say, then other people is going to do that, you know. And this case is the narco, the Albanian mob, the people who is taking the spots that belongs to the state and belongs to the government, you know. So I think that's the most. If I would be a Assembleista, congressman here, and I would be discussing the impeachment, I would say the very best crime that Guillermo Lasso had made in this crisis was to defund the police, and defund the hospitals, and defund the education system that led some of parts of the Ecuador that had been given to the narco.
Sure.
It sounds like the civil service, the state, the government bureaucracy is being basically transformed. It's almost like it's being privatized and is now being assumed by these kind of these antisocial, these criminal elements that are just, you know, they're even less interested in the welfare of the people than the government is.
Yeah, I would say that. That's, and you cannot say that the people, I don't know how to say this expression in English, but you can say the people is guilty of that because they have mm-hmm. no other choice, you know.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm curious, right? This brings up a lot of different questions in my head, right? How do you think Ecuador can get out of this, right? And I know that's a big question, but like, do you think that there will be early elections? And if there are early elections, does RC, Revolución Ciudadana, like, do you think getting them back into power could fix things? Like, where are you at with that?
Well, I have my first answer was I think the first step is to take Lasso out from office. You know, I think we cannot do anything without that, because Lasso is a president that had a very poor political management, no democratic disposition. He had buried any contact with all the political parties and social civil organizations and everything. So he had burned any relationship with everybody here. So I think he cannot do anything to solve this situation. So the first step is to take out him from office. But then you have to generate like whole pact agreement with all the political class and all the parties, a multi-party pact convention to that with one or two consensus that led you to go forward with some very, very, very essential things, you know. And I think there is the health situation, the education situation. I have friends say that we have to have in Ecuador at least one or two things that we all agree, and then start to build and growing, to rebuilding this country, you know. And I'm convinced. I wasn't convinced, but now I'm convinced that with Lasso in power, that's impossible. At this moment, it's impossible because as I said, he has not only fought with Revolución Ciudadana or other traditional parties. So he is in bad terms with the indigenous movement, with the ecologists, with everybody. He has now no allies here. So basically, also one of the theories is he's going out. He's not going to win his impeachment because he has no allies in the government, not even the militaries, and not even the U.S. embassy that was a natural ally of Guillermo Lasso, at least when he came 2 years ago.
Sure.
I mean, I have my read here is I don't know if you guys know, but like 2 months ago, the attorney's office here in Ecuador had I don't know how to say this word, but they broke into the Palacio de Carondelet. Like, it's like the attorney broke into the White House in the United States. So that was what was very surprising. That doesn't happen every day, you know. And we read that as a break in relationship between the U.S. embassy and the government here in Ecuador.
You see, that's so interesting. So I guess I'll just ask you straight up. Do you think Guillermo Lasso will be removed from office? Because I've also seen there's talks he might try to dissolve the assembly. Is that a possibility? What do you think will happen?
Yes, the Ecuadorian constitution is very particular, I think. And he has a mechanism that is that gives an advantage to the president before the assembly. So if the assembly go forward with the impeachment, the president can dissolve it, and we're just with signing a decree. But I insist, I think to do that, Glasso needs political power. Well, I mean, at least the militaries to keep them here, keep them there, you know. And I'm not seeing that. From a sociological place, I'm seeing a power transition here, I think. I can be 1,000 wrong, but I think that in a couple of weeks, Lasso would have to go out from office because he has nobody to keep him there, you know. Yeah, that. Also, he's moving very well to get some votes and avoid the impeachment, but I don't think he has the political power to remain there 2 years. Two more years. It's a lot of time.
Sure.
You know, there have been only 2 years of government, and it's like it has been 10.
That's what I'm saying. I remember, so pulling behind the curtain, Julian and I met through kind of like working with the Progressive International in Peru and some of the work there. I remember the Progressive International. We had Matt. We know Matt. We had Matt on this podcast 2 years ago talking about Ecuador because he went to Ecuador for the election. And I remember talking about Arauz and everything going on there. And it was very interesting. But that leads me to my next question, which is, if Lasso is impeached, do you think early elections will happen? And if they do, do you think Revolución Ciudadana would be able to win this time? How do you think those elections would look?
Okay, there you have a couple of things to say, and I mix here, I mix what I want and what I think it's
sure.
Probably or highly, but I would say if he is impeached, the process says that the VP takes office and finish the period, so he would be in theory 2 more years the vice president. Which is a vice president that is not very, I mean, he has not a clear agenda. He's a doctor, a right-wing doctor that went with Lasso in the election, but he's not a very famous politician and has no history, has no legacy, has no anything. So it's an opportunity to have these two or three consensus that I talked to you about, even in a right-wing government, but at least with the minimums of a functional state. Also, I think that if Lasso dissolves the assembly, the legislative, then we have early elections. Like he has like 6 months to make the elections, and in that case, I mean, Revolución Ciudadana, the Correa's party, is a party that had a clear recuperation in these elections in February. We had local elections here, and they were the strongest party and took a lot of how you say the mayor office.
Yeah,
they won a lot, and that it's that says you that the that movement is very good and the people is thinking that is a solution for this topic. But if you have 2 more years of government for them in local offices and they can't solve this problem, which is very probably because the problem is not an easy problem to solve, when then maybe things will be different in 2 years. So I think if I was Revolución Ciudadana is in a contradiction there because they have to wait a couple of years or at least a period of time to try to get Correa back, which the most important and the only important person in that party. So the only electoral machine here there is Correa, and they have like a period of time to make him come back and win the elections. But also, as long as the time goes, they had to govern their local offices, mainly Quito and Guayaquil, the two most important cities that they won in February. So if we have 2 years of government and they don't bring results, maybe people will punish them also in 2 years, and will make the people will look for another response, and then that is very. We cannot say what will be the other alternative here in elections. It can be far right, can be, the scenario is made me think that it's that it's very probably or highly probably that we have a far right new movement here because of the security crisis. You know, if you ask my opinion, I would like to have elections soon, so we don't have the opportunity to this. We talked before you started recording, but this Javier Milei's expression here.
Oh God, we'll get there.
or Bukele's or something.
Yeah,
the security situation is as bad as people will look for solution for sure. Easy and clear solutions, and that's where these candidates grew very fast, you know.
Sure.
A very familiar story. We've seen it. We see it play out all over the world, this kind of dynamic.
I was about to say that's a super fascinating point, Julian, because once again, it's the kind of perspective you can only get on the ground seeing it, right? I never thought about that, but that's a really good point, right? Like, because from my perspective, I saw the results in February, right? Oh, Correismo's back, we're coming, we're getting Ecuador back, baby, and then we're gonna put UNASUR right back in Quito, right? We're almost there. But that's an interesting point, something we talk about a lot on the podcast is, right, like what we call like sometimes like the stain of governance, right? Sometimes when you engage in liberal democracy, right, when you get elected to these municipal offices in Quito or Guayaquil, now you have to govern, and when you're governing within a structure that's already decaying, the people are going to blame you regardless of the context. Right. So I think that's also a very interesting point. We'll be crossing our fingers. We'll see what happens. But I am curious because you mentioned Milei, and we'll get to our Argentina here in a moment. But I had one last question on Ecuador, at least myself. I don't know if T, you have any others. You touched upon this a little bit, right, referring to the indigenous movements. I'm curious, what has the role of Pachakutik been during Lasso's presidency? Have they, because I know they've been like back and forth, right? How do you see Pachakutik moving into this next phase?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and it's a very interesting issue. I would say Pachakutik has to simplify this at the highest level, I think has two wings. Ideological left wing that is led by Leonidas Issa. I think you know about him, but he's not in the formal structure of Pachakutik. He's the leader of the
CONAIE.
I don't know how to say it in English, but it's a confederation of nationalities. Yeah. So it's not a political party, and its political party is Pachakutik, but Pachakutik is not controlled by CONAIE, like at least formally. And then you have another wing of local leaders that their relationship with the state was more more transactional in terms of some sensible issues for the indigenous movement. And this wing in the Pachakutik is we think is going to don't give the votes for the impeachment. We think that in exchange of for some I'm not talking about rapes or something that can be also, but I'm talking about the management of some areas of the state that indigenous have claimed for. Since there came in the political scenario here in Ecuador, and that's related to education, to ecological topics, and other agendas that the indigenous people have the indigenous party had for themselves. So the question you said about the votes, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I think they will vote divided. Like they have like 18 votes in the assembly. So I think at least half of them will not be with the impeachment motion, and that's because they are. And also that's another thing that is very interesting is they are going through an internal elections in the same moment. So they have these two wings competing for the conduction of the party. At the same time, the impeachment is going. So we'll know what's going on with the next 4 years of Pachakutik. At the same time, we know what's going on with the president, and they are competing this corporate wing with the more leftist or social organizations based wing.
Sure. No, that's super interesting, and we'll have to have you on another time to talk more about Ecuador, because this is obviously going to be a situation that continues to develop. But before we move on from Ecuador, T, I don't know if you had any other Ecuador questions. Okay, cool. Okay, before we let you go, Julian, considering Julian is one of our best Argentine compas, you know we got to talk a little Argentina if you're game. So first of all, before we even talk about it, I have to say congratulations on the Mundial, right? The great victory, right? Which my first question is simple. Messi or Maradona? Go.
No, it's anything but simple, that question. But
that's true.
I would say Messi because we are, you know, with goosebumps. Because it was 3 months ago and we watched it live. And
that's fair.
I was going to say, I'm obviously not Argentine. I was almost crying when I saw Scaloni on the sidelines crying. I was like, oh my goodness, yeah. my heart. Anyways, I had to say that. So serious question. Who is Javier Milei? Who the hell is it? Does he have a serious chance to win?
Well, I think the first answer is yes. He has a chance to win, and it's mainly not because of him, but because of the inability of the two major coalitions to give response to the people of mainly in the economic issue, inflation and all the unemployment crisis in Argentina. It's not unemployment, but inflation is really the problem there. It's an endemic problem. It has generations and it's systematic, and I think when El Frente de Todos, el Peronismo, won the elections in 2019, they won the elections with the tacit promise of solve the economic problem, or at least make the material situations better than they were with Macri. And they failed on that task. So a lot of working people find themselves without an alternative, without a representation in the political system. So they are looking for another solutions. And in that context, Javier Milei is a far right economist that not only talks about economics but about the social rights and investment, and now he wants to dollarize Argentina.
Oh my God!
But with very, with very simple language and with very at least it seems like a simple solution. He makes the solution simple, so he's getting a lot of support in the young people, in the working people, and also in the people that has been betrayed by the political system. That sounds clear for you. I mean, people didn't find a response in the political system, and the politicals have failed them. So they found an answer in Milei's political disposition. I think he can win, but it's only up. I mean, Argentina had like 40 years of democracy, and I would say 20 years of a bi-party system that worked very well, you know, with very well in democratic, liberal democratic terms, with alternative, with elections going well. And I think this is a break moment because that might change here. And another thing that is, I think it's very concerning and is also measured by polls, is that the Argentinian society is driving to the left, is to the right, sorry, is like derechizándose, is making more right wing all the society. So now we discuss the political agenda in the discussion in the media, in every place, is much more to the right than it was 5 years ago, and that's as I said, is measured. We have polls that represent that, so and studies, and so that's I think that's the biggest problem here. Not Milei, that, but the I don't know how to say this, but the derechización of the society,
like the societal trend.
Yes.
Yeah. Something I keep saying is just how important this election in Argentina in October is going to be for all of Latin America, right? If the far right, if Milei wins in Argentina, I think it only makes it more possible for somebody like Kast to come back in Chile when there's elections in Chile. It only makes it more possible for far right characters, maybe even in Ecuador, like you said. And the importance of hanging on to Argentina. Like we only just started talking about bringing UNASUR back, right? And that all could go away if the far right takes power in Argentina. And how depressing that would be. So I have to ask, unless you had something, did you have something to add to that?
No, only to say that the Milei is, I mean, I don't know if this is, it sounds clear to you guys, but I think Milei is the natural son of this old right movement.
Yes.
You know, it's very clear. Is
yep.
He, I mean, Lasso is a right-wing president that had to going more to the center to win the elections. Milei is not going to anywhere. He's being him, yep. And it's highly probable. I won't say highly probable, but he's competing, being him, being this old right candidate with no respect for human rights, for social issues, etc. And he's gaining support by being that. And that's I think that's the more important problem.
Sure.
But not only that. to add to the discussion.
Sure. No, that's very useful context there. So I have to ask, right? We've talked in the podcast before about how the incumbent vice president and former president, Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, was banned from running, right? And that's a whole other conversation in and of itself. But I have to ask you, so there was big news in Argentina just, I think it was last week, Alberto Fernandez, the incumbent president, said he would not be seeking another term, right? So I'm curious, who do you expect the Frente de Todos candidate to be? Does Cristina have any chance of having the ban overturned? I know I see people talk about that. I don't know. Am I being too optimistic? Who do you expect to see as the candidate?
Alberto took a long time to say he was not going to run. I mean, that was for about like a year ago with his numbers. No. So to answer to your question, it's. I mean, the Frente de Todos is not going to win this election. The only scenario I'm seeing them winning is, I don't know, if they have like a very big change here now, that in the global economic structure give them the chance to react to some economic problems. I mean, Frente de Todos is not going to win in any scenario because they. If they go to the second round, they will lose practically with any candidate, with Macri's candidate or with Milei. So that makes difficult for the Argentinian, for the Frente de Todos dirigents to want to run this election because it's a defeat for sure, you know. So in this context, I think I'm very convinced that it's not the same to lose for 5 points in a ballotage, or that to don't even go to the second round, to the ballotage, or to take an historical bad result. So I think in that context, the Frente de Todos will have like 4 or 5 candidates in the PASO, which is the primaries, the open primaries. You know, I'm not if you are familiar with that, but Argentina has open primaries for all parties, so you can go and vote for the primaries in any party. So in that primary, I think Frente de Todos will have 4 or 5 candidates, at least one for the Cristina's wing, another one for the more conservative wing inside the Frente, and another one for the governors of the north or governors of the not Buenos Aires, I mean the interior of the country. And I think, and also it's a speculation that the economy minister Sergio Massa, I think you guys in America know something about him. It's another option to be one of those 4 or 5 candidates in the primaries, and I think the one who wins in the primaries will it's up to who wins that elections, and we know the result of the Frente de Todos, if it's a strong historical defeat or not that bad defeat that make them able to conduct and to run the opposition the next 4 years. Mm-hmm. That is it's a very important thing, because we don't have to be magic to know that if Milei wins, for example, the political stability will not be very very strong. So you need to have an alternative there, being the opposition and giving clear responses and trying to build representation to fight them if they win, you know.
Yeah, no, that's very sobering. But no, that's good. Like I remember, if I recall correctly, when we were in Lima, it was before the midterms in Argentina. And I remember
that was a disaster.
I was about to say, and I remember you told me, you said to me, you were like, I don't think it's going to be good. It's not going to be. And you were right. So I trust your opinion here, even though it depresses me.
Well, yeah, but I think that I didn't know it was going to be that bad in that moment.
So it's going to be
even worse. What was a midterm, big punishment, that midterm for the Frente de Todos, and then it was only getting worse. No, Argentinian society has because of many factors has a lot of ice in the dollar prices. So two days ago they skyrises like 20% or 30%. So things are not going well because they are. This explosion is going to be before the election, so the government will take all the credit for the situation, and it's going to be worse than it was in that midterm, and it's worse is going right now. So I'm not very optimistic with Argentina. I'll say I really want to this election to be a moment we build a different representation. I think. From this primary, we can take new leaderships that collects all the Cristina left in a good way and brings an alternative to be a strong opposition in the next 4 years that will be very very difficult.
Sure, no, that's really interesting, man. So I don't want to take up too much of your time, T. I don't know if you had any other. Okay, cool. So wow. Very informative stuff there, Julian. But before we go, I did want to give you a chance here to, I don't know if you have anything to plug. I don't know if you have anywhere people can find you or anything like that. This is your chance.
Okay. I have a question before that.
Please.
What is the name of the podcast?
Machete y Mate, right here.
No, I know. I mean, I follow you guys on Spotify. I didn't listen all I wanted, but I follow you on Spotify. But why is that name? Machete y Mate.
Because we are uniting... Todo nuestra América. El machete del Caribe y el mate de America Sur.
Spectacular. Very nice.
Makes sense, right?
I like it a lot.
And it sounds good. M-A-E-M-A, right? It rolls off the tongue.
Yeah. Nice. Very nice. Thank you. Thank you very much, guys, for having me here. With more English practicing.
Oh, no, you're good.
Here again. Fantastic. So I enjoy that a lot. Whenever you want, I enjoyed this a lot. So thank you very much for the chat. I'm only on Twitter, like Julian Garrido 97. That's my user. I talk shit there. Now it's a bit abandoned, but I spread opinions by there.
There you go.
So that.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much.
No, likewise. It's been a pleasure. And we'll definitely have you on again when hopefully we get good news in Ecuador and maybe bad news in Argentina. We'll bring you back. Anyways, okay. Peace out, y'all.
Take it easy.
Mi gente, thank you for listening to this edition of Machete Mate. If you support what we do, consider showing your solidarity at patreon.com/machetemate. You'll be helping us out by allowing us to put out more and better content while also getting access to our Discord community, our more casual and personal After Dark episodes, and any other projects we might have down the road. If not, we still love you, so show us some love with a good rating and review on whatever platform you spend time with us. And as always, hasta la victoria.